Welcome back to Great America Outlaw, guys. Coming at you this week with fellow Canuck, Peter McIsaac. Why does it say 3.1? Oh, that's the date. Ah, got me. We're into March already. Crazy. Crazy time. It's my birthday almost.
March 10th, right?
March 10th, my birthday, yeah.
What is it, 43?
Probably election day. 44. Yeah. So, yeah, election day probably. That's the day.
No, I don't think it's going to happen that fast.
Well, no, it won't be the election. It'll be the day they call the election.
You think so? That fast? I'm looking forward to seeing if your prediction is going to come true. But
that's the rumor. That's the rumor is that... Is that the election is going to be called the first week, that week, that same week, no matter who gets it, even Carney's going to call it. Because like right now it's going to be weird, right? I mean, even for him, you don't want to be that guy that you're the prime minister and you're not like allowed in there. You've got to like stand off to the side in the little guest box.
Yeah, for like 9 months or 8 months or whatever and just be like.
Yeah, nobody wants to be like the cuck prime minister. I mean, that's what it is. You're basically watching somebody. Do your job. You appoint somebody to go up there and say the things you want. I mean, it's like
I don't know
closest you could get to a cuckold prime minister.
I don't know if he's ready for 8 months of memes against him either. Like the internet's vicious right now, and the memes about him lying are just hilarious.
I gotta say, I don't think this is a good move. I commented on one of them. You know, this is probably the more reason the right wing Twitter is mad at me. Because I was like, I can't remember who I replied to. It wasn't Table Salt, though. So, oh, sorry, dude. I mean, I didn't mean to piss you off. Anyway, because I think to a certain extent, there's no such thing as bad publicity. So this could have the same effect as it had as like the mainstream media made the mistake in the first Trump election of like even the Trump bashing turned into Trump promotion almost. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think that
it almost starts me. Here's the thing. I notice it in myself. It just now, instead of just having this hatred that I used to have, this like hatred that like maybe hatred ain't the word, but you know what it is. Like you see Trudeau's pick or Jagmeet's pick, or you hear him start talking and you just get this feeling, right? And I had that with Carney all the time too, even just like seeing his face. It happened fast with him. But then I see all these little like joke memes going around, and instead it's like subconsciously lightening my Carney look.
Oh, you know? That's interesting.
Now I'm not as triggered when I see his face. It almost brings a humor, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. That's
subconscious problems. I mean, I commented, I was like, you should just not promote, period. Whether it's because not only that, it's almost like this most interesting man alive sort of scenario you've got of it, right? Like you're saying he's lying, but at the same time, you're putting him in all of these like super heroic situations or super like, you know, all this crazy stuff that I think is just subconsciously a terrible idea. I think it'd be interesting to see what someone like Scott Adams or one of these persuasion guys thinks about this. But I think this is an op by the left that has been picked up by the right and is working perfectly.
Well, you should ask Scott about it because you've got your Twitter back now with a lot of followers. You might be able to get an answer from him. But I mean, I think my prediction's coming true as well, though, that the liberals are coming up enough to make the polls look like it's even, and they're gonna squeak out.
I've seen lately is showing that is debunking all that.
It's still increased. Like it's still gone up enough. That's what my point about
it was down 15% though.
But it's still up way up from where it was. Even the polls that are showing conservatives still leading by 13 points or whatever is still way different than it was
The other thing is, I mean, we can't start trusting the polls now.
We've just
seen them get obliterated so many times, and just knowing how they work, it's like, okay, cool, you called some people.
Yeah, no, when
the party I support texts me, I'm like, don't ever fucking text me again. I don't know how they got me in their number, but I get texts from the UPC all the time. I'm like, don't fucking text me. Stop. You just do the all cap stop. Anyway, we'll see if my prediction's right. I mean, he's got to win the leadership vote.
No, he doesn't.
I think Buddy was more impressive than him.
I
couldn't even tell you his name. That's the problem.
He's chosen, Darren. the liberals are choosing him. He's chosen. Whether he passes it off, like you said, or not, I mean, he's been chosen.
It's almost like the complete demise of the Liberal Party in some ways.
Because it's a demotion for him.
This chick in Ontario is like hanging on too after she lost her own riding. He's like, well, I'm still going to be leader of the party anyway. I mean, this is sort of what
that's what that meme meant.
Where is he going to run? It sounds, if I mean, it sure seems like he's going to run in Alberta.
I don't know. I don't think it's, they'll change the rules or something, dude. I mean, he's been chosen to lead us into the liberal world order. His, the JT cycles up and it's him, the mentor's time to take over in his demotion to do this. I mean, he's doing it for the good of his own liberal world order. Because it's a demotion. He's on all these boards. And
I like this argument because we're going to know real soon. One of us will be able to gloat. Like,
yeah, totally.
In like 8 weeks. None of our other ones ever come to any sort of end.
This will be quite obvious.
I'm going to win. Let us know who you agree with. Anyway, and sign up for Plus. That's important. Yeah. AmericaOutloud.ca. It's super important.
And this is a good chat with Peter. I mean, he's great. His book is awesome. Redneck Conservative, How Conservatives Are Made. It's on, I got a link there, to the Amazon link and, x.com/PeterRMacIsaac. And that's Mac, MacIsaac, MacIsaac. Probably this spelt the same way as my grandma spells her name in from the same area. So
your cousin. Yeah. Sign up for Plus, guys, and enjoy the chat with Peter MacIsaac.
Peter MacIsaac, welcome to Grimerica Outlaw. Thanks for joining us.
Outlaw?
Well, some big news here, guys. I may even be somehow or another related to Graham.
My second cousin or something. I was just thinking, I mean, what if you're cousins with my grandma or cousins with my grandma's brother? I mean, I don't know. The families here are so big back there.
Well,
my grandma's a MacIsaac. She's got lots of brothers and sisters. We got to be related down there somewhere.
Yeah, and my dad came from down in Inverness, the home of the MacIsaacs, and you've got that MacIsaac look about you, bud. You got the eyebrows. You got a bunch of the features. So odds are real good. I'd say you got a bunch of Scott in you, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, my dad's Dunlop. So, I mean, my dad's blood is right from Scotland. So Dunlop and MacIsaac, basically. So, yeah, I'm kind of a mutt for a UK mutt.
There you go, buddy. You know what? You're a lot better off here than in the UK.
Well, I don't know. I mean, right now. Yeah. But
yeah, it's a real mess over there.
Yeah. Well, it's a real mess here too. I mean, let's start with, I mean, your background is interesting because it really does sort of, it brings some good context to what we're going to be talking about today about Canada and the redneck conservative in your book and stuff. Cause you've had a good variety of experience working at different jobs in the government. I mean, you did go viral a couple of years ago. I remember seeing you about the fires, I think it was.
Yeah, we had the largest fire down here in Nova Scotia in 2023 in our history. And Trudeau jumped on it and tried to blame it on climate change. And it turned out to the only change it was that it was arson, and it was kind of inconvenient. So the RCMP wouldn't rule arson until natural resources went in, and within, I think, 24 hours, laid three different charges, arson-related.
Wow.
So I got kind of pretty upset. My wife and I, we were at home at the time, and we were under an order to potentially evacuate. And I said, well, look, I'm a professional forest firefighter, did it for 29 years working for DNR, along with being a game warden and a wildlife specialist. So I said, this is insanity. Why don't I put together a team of recently retired guys, and we'll work into the incident command system at upper-level positions when they need relief. And we offered our services up for 5 days in a row to the provincial government, and every day they flat out turned us down. And when all was said and done, I was not a happy boy because they brought in people to fight fires from South Africa, U.S., and Western Canada. And while they had locals here and people's homes were burning down, nothing was being done that should have been done to make sure that didn't happen. So I kind of sat in the chair I'm in now, and I made a video, and it ended up getting 177 million views on TikTok. So I started getting phone calls from all over the world saying, what the hell's going on with fires in Canada? So I could tell you the province didn't like what I had to say because I buried everybody in the process. But I made some good friends out of it, one of them being Reiner Fulmick. So I got a call from Reiner Fulmick, who's still in jail over there in Germany. And then we got talking politics, and that led into what I'm involved in with the Independent Nova Scotia Initiative in Nova Scotia. But yeah, I've done a lot of different things, buddy. I've lived three lifetimes so far, and I'm going to try to jam in two more.
Well, it's interesting because the fire thing seemed to be, I mean, that seems to be sort of a trend where people aren't allowed to help out. They're not allowed to stay with their homes. They're not allowed to go back to their homes. Like, was that sort of the same? Like, it's hard for me to understand if this is all like a concerted effort or if it's just like each region has its own incompetence around this thing. Like, why wouldn't they let you guys help out? I mean, what was their reasoning? Is it just some over bureaucratic red tape bullshit or?
Well, it's a combination of everything. First of all, it's provincial hiring policy in Nova Scotia now to hire everybody based on diversity, equity, and inclusion nonsense. And that started federally here back in the early 90s, and it was really embedded in the RCMP, and that flooded over into the federal government. And now it's in all levels of bureaucracy from coast to coast Canada. It's in the boardrooms of most companies. It's an absolute disaster, and that's why Donald Trump just put an end to it south of the border, because the trickle-down effect of hiring people based on something other than meritocracy is strategically, how do you destroy a country? How do you destroy a nation? How do you destroy a society? Start hiring idiots. And all you have to do is look at Parliament. If you hire enough clowns, you end up with a circus. And so that's what happened in forest firefighting all across Canada. Like I say, I got a 29-year track record doing it. And I called them out pretty hard on that. But initially, I got involved in what I'm doing now, guys, with back when Trudeau took that bribe from the Aga Khan for, I think it was $125,000 or $150,000 trip from a lobbyist. And so the Aga Khan just died recently, but I had done law enforcement for 29 years. And I can remember prior to retiring in 2012 that if you took a coffee for free, that you could be terminated from employment. And so Justin Trudeau was taking, $125,000 trips from lobbyists. And so I got together with a former MLA and talked to some of my buddies, ex-RCMP and Halifax police and some lawyers. And I filed a formal criminal code complaint on Justin Trudeau with Ottawa RCMP. And they assigned a file number to that. It was 20181359 24, opened an investigation. And a couple of weeks later, Trudeau DEI hired Brenda Luckey to be commissioner of the RCMP. And that file got squashed.
Wow.
And I was one unhappy person. And I said, okay, if that's the way this is going to be, I'm going to dig in and I'm not going away. And I'm a Cape Breton pit bull and I won't let go. So the next thing I did, guys, was I opened another investigation with the We Charity, filed another formal complaint, went through all the procedural stuff you have to do. And Ottawa RCMP opened a file on the Aga Khan affair, and that was file number 2020-1019-302. And in that case, I named Justin Trudeau, but I also named Bill Morneau for violating section 121 of the criminal code. And Morneau stepped down, and the public never knew why he stepped down. He stepped down because he was under investigation on that file. Subsequently, though, that file got squashed by Brenda Luckey's team as well. And I went, well, the whole system's totally corrupt. I mean, it's just destroyed. In 2012, I actually, after I retired, hoped that I could work inside the system and maybe fix it. So I ran in provincial politics. And then I realized that this is nothing what I thought it would be. The party
politics have it locked down pretty much, right?
Yeah. And most people don't realize is, when people run for politics, parties, whether they be provincial or federal, they form a committee. It's called a candidate selection committee. And they go out trying to find people that they can influence, bribe, threaten, or control. And as soon as I got involved, they went, well, we made a mistake. We can't control McIsaac. So they made sure that I didn't win. I put in a pretty good showing, but it still didn't win. So I stayed involved, hoping I could make some changes. And as that was going on, then the other thing I did is when COVID started, Justin Trudeau gave a pretty nasty rant, probably against you two and me and another 6 million Canadians, calling everybody a misogynist, racist, a bunch of stuff. And that was a hate speech rant, according to the new legislation that they had passed, right, federally. And so we opened another criminal code investigation in Ottawa on them. And the file number on that one, I'm kicking these out because if anybody writes them down and looks in them, they'd be interested. And that was 2022-13124. And Brenda Luckey squashed that one as well. So I just gave up completely and realized the RCMP at the upper echelons, because all upper echelon management RCMP right now are DEI hires. You can't progress through the policing system in Canada anymore unless you're 100% woke. You can't get a promotion. You got to buy into all this nonsense. And so when you're wondering why Trudeau's not in jail, nobody's been perp walked out of parliament, why we've got 11 unnamed people potentially guilty of treason in parliament right now, that's because the RCMP are completely corrupted at their upper levels. And the PMO's office gives the direction to the head of the RCMP, and they do exactly what they're told. They're not supposed to. But I work with these guys my entire career, and a lot of these guys were good guys, thought they'd make a difference. But upper management's been destroyed.
Sam Cooper was saying up to 50. He thinks it's 50.
Yeah, I watched that interview. So I think he was a retired former one of the top people at CSIS, who said, the fact of the matter is they give them good intelligence, but most people don't understand about CSIS. When I opened that first complaint against Trudeau, CSIS did a file on me right away. They opened a file on me. Like I said, I got audited, and they tracked me for over a year. They're probably monitoring this call right now. But what happens is CSIS can collect intel using means that the RCMP aren't allowed to use. Where they need warrants, CSIS don't. And it's like CSIS may know that you did something, but they can't use that evidence against you because it wasn't obtained legally. You know, for example, they didn't get warrants to eavesdrop on you or dig into your files.
Yeah, they'll wait for an opportunity to do that.
Yeah. So what they do is they find out what you're up to, and then they monitor. Then they make an application for a warrant. But a lot of times they get turned down because the grounds to get a warrant aren't there, even though they know you're guilty as hell. And so this goes on all the time. And so what ends up happening inside the CSIS, they know who the people are, all 50 of them, that are compromised inside Parliament right now. But how they gathered that data, they can't reveal sources, and they can't reveal how they got it. So the RCMP, in some cases, can't use that data to lay charges. And if they do want to lay charges, here's the big problem, guys, that your followers are going to want to know. Even if the police want to lay charges, the charges have to be laid through a crown prosecutor who's willing to forego their opportunity to ever be promoted to a judge or a Supreme Court judge. When you go after the government as a crown prosecutor, you're never being promoted to a judge. So in Ottawa, wherever the charges are laid, that's where the crown prosecutor has to come from. And even if the police should grow a backbone for a change and decide they want to do their job, you have to find a crown prosecutor willing to do their job as well. And then if you do get it in court, you have to remember that our court right now is saturated with what I call woke tards and libtards that were put there by the federal Liberal government. Same thing that's happened to the Senate. Our Senate's useless now. I think we're going to have something like 80% of our senators now that have been appointed by the Liberal Party. And Trudeau's putting
105.
How many is it, Darren?
100 out of 105.
Yeah, so our Senate now is just totally owned by the Liberal Party. So that's the strategic reason why the WEF right now is bringing in Mark Carney. Right? You gotta start digging around in Mark Carney, guys. I mean, he's the worst of the worst of the very worst. He's the worst thing that can happen to him.
Yeah.
It's a good thing he's unelectable. I mean, he's bleh. This is what I mean. He's just got this look to him that he's just not going to be able to pull it off. He's just too, I don't know. I mean, I'm surprised, to be honest, that Pierre can pull it off. But I think Pierre, when he lost the glasses and, you know, that Apple thing really helped him out. But, you know, Carney's not pulling that dork card off. He's too dorky for politics.
He's
unless they cheat, they could always just cheat. If they cheat, they can do anything. But the public will not vote for this guy. He's too ugly and nerdy and just, you know, he's crazy.
So even the campaign they're running now is just a very, very well-coordinated PSYOP. They've taken every Tavistock Institute technique that was perfected by Edward Bernays on how to mass control millions of people. And they've applied it. They applied it to what happened in COVID. And now they're applying it to the Mark Carney campaign. I watched some stuff he posted the other day on Twitter. And it had like 130,000 views, but it only had about 30 comments. And so I went, okay, so they're trying to create the impression that all kinds of people are following Carney when he's paying $35, you know, or $50 for an ad campaign to push it out in front of a bunch of people. And for the folks who don't know any better, it's like when the liberals buy bots and support their everything that they push on Facebook or any social media. It's all manufactured garbage.
Yeah, all of Twitter especially. I mean, we had James Lindsay on our other show last week, and he's like, you know, what, we don't know what the number is. But the more I'm on there, and I'm even looking at accounts that have like a lot of followers, you know, like a lot, no, like maybe like 40,000. And I'm just like going through their timeline. And I'm like, something just ain't, you know, it's just like,
it's not right, boys.
I can almost like predict what their things are going to be. And this, you got this other weird thing where it's turning people into robots because they're chasing the algo or chasing the impressions. And now that they've monetized, so it's hard to tell if it's a monetized person on the other end that's algo chasing, or if it's, I'm just like, man, this seems like very artificial. There's something artificial about it. And then we talked to James Lindsay, and I've noticed the thing for sure where you just see like the, you know, that you'll get a bunch of followers that are all like hooker bots, and then they'll disappear, and then some new ones will come in, or then they'll be like it. And I'm like, you know, that's almost like soft cover. It's like all these people I'm interacting with, not all of them, but a good chunk of them at this point could just be bots easily.
Well, you got to remember, guys, Mark Carney, you know, he sat in, where was he at, in a bar the other day, pretending he was your average guy wearing a, you know, a hockey jersey and drinking what would look to me like Guinness out of a Coors Light glass, right? So, I mean, he spends his time driving around in Rolls Royces, eating Grey Poupon, right, and drinking champagne, and hanging around with people like Prince Andrew or Ghislaine Maxwell down at Epstein Island. And I can't understand why Pierre and them aren't asking to say, well, look, how many trips did you make down to Epstein Island? You got to remember that Prince Andrew, right? I mean, he was a regular at Epstein Island, and he threw a big house party, and he partied with Mark Carney and these guys all the time. So did Ghislaine Maxwell, and she's in time. She's doing hard jail time now for being a convicted sex offender. For what was she doing?
She's the groomer.
Yeah, she was the groomer for the young girls down at the island for all the pedos that were down there. So I can't tell you that Carney's a pedo. Right, I'm not going to say that. I'm just saying.
Kind of looks like.
If you're hanging around with pedos, and you know, if it was Donald Trump hanging around with them, they would crucify him. But here in Canada, somehow he seems to be getting a free pass. I've seen multiple pictures of him hanging around with them. And then you got to look at his record with the Bank of Canada. He was one of the, you know, he didn't do us any favors here. As a matter of fact, when he went to the UK, he dumped 56%. Cash increase into their market and blew their economy up, same as they did here, to the point that they had to boot him out, said, bud, you're done here, leave. So when he came back, they wanted to run him federally, and they wanted to run him down in the riding of Halifax West for the Federal Conservative Party. And I was the president of that EDA at the time. And they were going to parachute him in when it looked like the Speaker of the House who was Jeff Reagan. Jeff Reagan was going to step down, and they wanted to put Carney in and give him a seat. But they weren't 100% positive they were going to be wins. So when they weren't sure he was going to win, they didn't run him down here. But I started doing research into Mark Carney back then. And I can tell the people of Canada that if you think Trudeau's bad, you ain't seen nothing. This guy is Trudeau times 100. And the problem with him, you know, Trudeau's got the IQ of a turnip. But this Carney's smart. This is a smart man. He's not to be underestimated. And he's got the full backing of the WEF. It's not just them. He's got the Club of Rome. He's got the Committee of 300. He's got every major organization in the world that pulls the strings at the WEF level and above, wanting him in to come into power in Canada. And the strategic reason is that Carney will be the person who finally brings in digital ID. And because of his banking background, he'll try to convince Canada that a central bank digital currency is the solution for all of us. And I can tell you right now, we get a central bank digital currency, our freedom is finished. Guys like me and you too, you won't have accounts anymore.
Well, it's also to block Trump in the U.S. too. I do believe that's why Trump's going after the 51st state thing, is because we are the vanguard for the WEF, the globalists in Canada. It's happening. We're right there, you know, putting in all their policies. So if they need to keep Canada as part of that global situation, like they don't want, you know, America to take over the whole continent. I mean, even though some people say, oh, the North America Union is this globalist plan and all that, but I'm starting to think there really is two factions, and I don't know. I'd like to know what you think about this, because after watching J.D. Vance basically make the European Security Council cry, I mean, it does feel like it just, they can't be acting like this. There has to be like a massive shift happening here.
So my take on it, guys, is this. First of all, we're a huge security risk.
Yeah.
Right. So Sam Cooper is probably one of the top investigative reporters in Canada today, and he did a lot of work. I think it was Sam who blew the whistle on how many compromised people we have in Parliament. And those are just the ones that are, you know, were compromised in regards to an election. Klaus Schwab, head of the WEF, said at least half of Trudeau's caucus or WEF have infiltrated on behalf of the WEF.
Penetrated.
Yeah. So that's kind of we got to be careful with that word when we're talking about Justin. Anyway, so, because I do know the real reason why the wife left. Anyways, last week I watched an interview with a guy that, like I mentioned, that would be a great guy for you guys to interview. His name is Michelle, I think it's Michelle Boissonnev. I believe that. And he's a retired lieutenant general in the Canadian military. And he said straight up, Canada does not have the military capacity to protect
our borders, even just not even.
Yeah, you can't.
We don't have the capacity to, like, we couldn't like respond to a real, we don't even need to get attacked. We would just need, like, if we had like just a large scale catastrophe of some sort in one of the major cities, we don't have enough military to deal with that.
You know, yes, what he said was that
lock down a city.
He said it's absolutely impossible for the current Canadian military to protect any of our borders. And Trump's biggest concern is that northern border, because what's going to happen up there is more, you know, as that route stays open. That's his number one reason of interest in Greenland as well, because there's so many Chinese and Russian ships over around there. I mean, anything can be coordinated or set up from there. The bottom line is what we represent to them is not only a security risk. He doesn't want a company that, or not a company, but a country that's bordering on Marxism and full straight on socialism, woke nonsense on his northern border, because that kind of nonsense leaks down into where they are. And you got to remember, like here in Maritime Canada and in Quebec, for example, I was reading a graph today, or not a graph, but a printout on the amount of tariffs that we charge Canada. Like, we're spending twice as much on milk and cheese and poultry and stuff like that.
We charge the U.S. or Canada?
No, that Canada is charging the U.S. So the amount of tariffs that we levy on the U.S. With what's called supply management is scandalous, guys. I mean, it's insane. So
it goes well beyond that. I mean, if you can get a list of just the stuff we've historically been tariffing the U.S., aluminum is on that list, is basically endless. That's why I think his new take, which is more like, well, okay, well, because everyone was freaking out about thing, but I think his latest talking point now is that, well, we're just going to do, how about this? We'll just do reciprocal. So whatever you're tariffing us, we're going to tariff you right back.
Yeah, I read that earlier
today. You're kind of opening up this can where it's like, you know, because it almost seems like they're trying to force all the other countries to look at their own shit in the meantime. You know,
it's like saying that, Trump, or
that's what Trump's saying. Yeah,
that's what Trump's doing. You know what, guys, here's what Canada needs, to be honest with you. A lot of people probably take my book and throw it in the fire after I say this. But Canada needs a Trump and they need a Doge.
Apparently. I was just going to say that. Yeah.
Right? Because he would come in and clean stuff up.
But I mean, Darren and I
are in a real opposition. I mean, it'd be like the Hillary Clinton situation here right now with Mark Carney. You know, he's like the shitty white dude version of Hillary Clinton, except he, you know, we probably didn't kill anybody. Maybe. I don't know him that well. But, well, you know, if we had any real candidate would blow this fucking guy out of the water. But the best we got is this fucking half-wit Pierre that kind of says the right thing sometimes, but most of the time he doesn't say the right thing. And if he does, it's usually not until it's too late. I mean, he's dressing up like a fucking Indian too. And, you know, he's doing this pandering bullshit again. Can we just have a politician that's just authentic? Just like, hey. You know, yeah, no, I'm not going to fucking dress up like a fucking East Indian, man. I'll wear a suit. That's the best you're going to get.
Boys, I'm loving this. You guys are hardcore. I wasn't expecting.
Well, it's just like Pierre's, you know, people forget that Pierre was pro everything. He was pro lockdown. He was pro vaccine. He was pro all of it. Until it became perfectly clear, exactly perfectly clear of where the majority is. Maybe not perfectly, but his team sensed like, hey, man, you know, it seems like there's more people. This freedom convoy has showed us that there might be some more people on the other side than we thought. And then you instantly see him pivot into this freedom thing and freedom, blah, blah, blah. And then he doesn't have a goddamn thing to say other than axe the tax until it's like, you know, and I'll give him the benefit that he did mention a few times about opening up the mining industry. But it's like nobody had anything to say about getting our fucking oil to market or getting our precious minerals to market or getting our natural gas to market. No one had fucking anything to say until Trump started threatening us. And then it's like, oh, we got to do this. We got to do that. We got to do this, including Pierre, man, including Pierre. Now, he did bitch at Justin about the LNG stuff. And, you know, that was about it. Even he was not.
Well, he's bitching about Carney's corruption, too. I mean, you got to give him.
But I'm not talking about the corruption. That's easy. That's just politics. They just sit there and bip about each other's. I mean, where would it's like these talking points we even have now about opening up the Canadian economy and supercharging it. Why the fuck weren't you just saying that? Like, why haven't you just been saying that the whole time? You know, why does it have to take the threat of economic meltdown before you even can? It's like, oh, yeah, well, we're going to supercharge this bitch. And it's like, what? Why the fuck haven't you been doing that the whole fucking time? Like, what are we doing here?
You sound exactly like my son, buddy. It's almost like sitting here listening to one of my boys.
Anyways, so I don't trust Pierre. I mean, you probably have a completely different take on it. I'm interested.
No, I don't actually
on it because you're on the East Coast and you guys are kind of in this different sort of situation. The Maritimes are in a different sort of situation, I think, than the West is because. I mean, you guys are ultimately fucked as well, but the West has been getting a raw deal and Saskatchewan and Alberta got drug into this confederation, kicking and screaming without a referendum, without any real legal process. And I, you know, we're at the point where I think the West best motive is to just get the fuck out of Dodge. And I think that, you know, I mean, part of me hopes Carney gets elected because what we need in the West right now is as counterintuitive as it sounds, is just, for Ottawa, you get in there, ban some shit, shut down some more oil and gas, cap it some more, because Alberta is at this weird boiling point that I didn't even think was possible. I really didn't think it's possible for it to get this, for the separatist fervor to get this high. And now I'm just like, man, I almost don't want someone to get in there and throw us a bone. It's almost better. Like, it's not really going to matter because Pierre's still not. I mean, we voted 2-1 to get rid of this equalization shit and we just got ignored. We've been blatantly ignored by the federal government, and we have no way to ever fix this. The Confederation is slanted to Quebec and Ontario. They pick the leaders, they do the legislation, and there's nothing that Alberta and Saskatchewan can ever do to change that. And the one thing that's coming to light with everyone being so into politics right now and paying attention is that the people are reading the stuff and they're learning the stuff and they're like, wait, what the fuck? How many senators do they get? How many do we get? Exactly. What the fuck is going on? But what is it like on the East Coast? Because, I mean, what is, like, you mentioned independent Nova Scotia, I think, but is it Newfoundland has a bunch of gas or a bunch of oil maybe, but what's that economic engine look like? Obviously Saskatchewan and Alberta have a different situation where we're sitting on trillions of dollars worth of natural resources that gives us this, that we could go it alone. What does that look like on the East Coast? Is the economy sustainable? Like, what would that look like for a separatist movement over there?
First off, let me mention that you guys are lucky enough to have Danielle Big Ball Smith.
Right? Yeah, and from what I hear, it goes a lot deeper than that. Like, I hear the separatist thing and that has been kind of building up around here for a long time, sort of waiting in the rays.
So here's what happened, guys, is even when this talk of tariffs came up, the first thing Donald Trump did was issued an IQ test to all the politicians in Canada, and the only person who passed was Danielle Smith. She had enough brains to get on a plane and fly down and have a meeting with them. And then last week when all the premiers went down, they got to meet. If you went, let's say you went up to Parliament and you had the chance to meet with one of the security guards, you went up to meet with the PM and instead you meet with a security guard out in the hall. That's basically what they had for a meeting down in the U.S. Donald Trump just looked at them like cockroaches, really, under his shoe. So at least out west, you have somebody now who will fight tooth and nail for you. We don't have that down here. I'm in Nova Scotia. I live just outside of Halifax. We have 2 trillion cubic feet of natural gas locked in our Muscadaba Valley, and our premier will not allow fracking. We have the second largest uranium deposit in Canada, just down the road from where I live, and there's a moratorium on mining. And we're being overrun right now by mass immigration to the point that, you know, we've only got 1.1 million people in Nova Scotia, and we've got 37 tent towns. Our price of living and everything here since 2019, the price of houses has more than doubled. Cost of living's gone through the roof. This is not the place to be living right now, guys. And we just had a provincial election that should have been close. And because of what we believe may have been foreign interference in our election, our premier ended up with a supermajority, and now he can do anything he wants to us down here, and we're screwed.
Wow. Right.
I mean, we got a real mess. What happened, guys, down here is about a year and a half ago, myself and a couple of engineer friends of mine, we formed a society called the Independent Nova Scotia Initiative. And we set out based on what happened. I'll give you an example. Out in BC, that election they just ran, if you had 4 or 5 independents out there, they'd control the legislature right now. And they could go in and start tabling legislation that the parties would have to approve, or they could crash the government. And that was our plan down here, to try to get a dozen independents in. There's only 55 ridings and 1.1 million people. And we had a set election date for July of this year. And the premier went in and dropped a snap election, broke his own legislation, and kind of cut us off at the pass. And we were going to run a full slate of independents. And here's why we think independence is the solution to politics in Canada. I was on the line with Brian Peckford, back and forth on how can we make the independent movement make a difference. And he said, Pete, what you need to do is you have to take the communities that are going to run the, instead of a candidate election, a selection committee finding a candidate, you need the people in the community to go find the candidate that they can still trust. Their handshake means something. And they're not going to lie, cheat, and steal. And then what you have to do is you got to tie their hands with a performance-based contract. Same as when you guys are working out in the oil patch. A lot of times you get a performance contract. Here's what you need to do. Here's your timelines. If you don't do it, we're going to fire you. Well, for the first time in Canadian history, in a parliamentary system, we proposed doing that down here. And we sold that idea from one end of the province to the other. And we had 18 candidates who were turned down by our Commissioner of Elections, Nova Scotia, and wouldn't let the 18 independents on the ballot. And we had the lowest voter turnout in our history and down 10% from our last election. And somehow, with this new digital early voting system, we ended up with a supermajority. And you can't have a supermajority when only 46% of the voter base turns out to vote. So we're screwed down here right now, guys, for the next 4 years. Now, actually, we're in Supreme Court on March 6th. We've got a judicial review on this matter, and they're looking into the whole affair. So we'll just call this the Tim Houston affair and say it's being officially looked into right now by the Supreme Court. But the general feeling down here is that what ended up happening, a lot of things down here, folks got used to handouts. And what the Maritimes need is a hand up, not a handout. If they unleashed that ability to frack and, you know, and access to some of our resource sector, we could be doing really good, guys, right? I'll give you an example. If we don't get your $3 billion in equalization payments, we won't have a healthcare system in Nova Scotia. It'd be catastrophic. And then I look at what Quebec takes from you guys. And to be honest with you, we shouldn't be taking 5 cents from you guys. You guys should be having what they have right now over in, I think it's over in Norway. They have, and Trump talked about doing this in the U.S. And it's an investment fund, like a trust.
A sovereign wealth fund?
A sovereign wealth fund. You know that over in there, I believe right now in Denmark, they've got $1.7 trillion in their sovereign fund. You know the kind of money you guys should have in a fund like that out in Alberta? You guys shouldn't have to pay tax. The cost of your fuel should be about a third of what it is. You guys should have, in your own province, should have the highest standard of living in Canada. And if you guys up and leave, the rest of us got it coming for how you guys been mistreated. Now, don't get me wrong, guys. Nobody I knew vote Liberal. And anybody who did, they're not going to put their hand up and admit to it anymore. That's for sure.
Well, wow. It just doesn't matter, though. There's no democratic solution for Alberta and Saskatchewan. Our voices will never be heard and we'll never have real sovereignty. We'll just always be at the whim of the East without being able to do a single thing about it. But, I mean, that's why people get excited about the 51st state, like it or not. I mean, let's be honest. He's not interested in the rest of the fucking country. He's interested in Alberta and maybe Saskatchewan and, you know, maybe parts of Ontario. But, I just feel like the 51st state, you'd get a little more, it just comes with a little more rights. It comes with a little more control over your natural resources. We'd quickly become one of the richest states in the union. I mean, if nothing else, our government should be using it as an opportunity to really shake things up and be like, hey, man, we don't mind sticking around. But, we need to see some fucking changes made. And I don't think that there's a government in Canada. None of them are willing to do that, including even if the PPC somehow miraculously got in.
So here's what's happening with the PPC, because I know some guys who are running. The PPC can't win with Max Bernier in charge, and Max knows that. Canadians are not going to vote in another French-speaking lawyer from Quebec. The ideas from the PPC are solid. He doesn't have a party whip, right? You're going to be able to free vote inside the PPC. But the fact is nobody's voting in another person who can't speak English properly from Quebec, who's a lawyer. This is not going to happen. Plus, when he started his campaign, he took in $300,000 to get started and would never, ever disclose where the money came from. And, I mean, he had a history of, I forget who he was shacked up with at the time, but I believe she was an ex-Hells Angels gal. And he got caught leaving high security, you know, top secret documents laying around when he's in the Harper government. They had to pull him off as a I forget what his position was in parliament, but they had to shit can him as a result of it. So Max is not the guy. If they had a real strong leader and ran a good platform, they could make a dent in things. But the problem is, guys, the party system is completely broken. I don't care how good a person is. When they go in, the party tells them, sit down, shut up, do what you're told. And the leader of the party, whether they're weak or strong, no matter who they are, they're still only the face of the party. I've been involved at the provincial and the federal level. It's the backroom boys, which Carney was one of, probably one of the most influential of. Those backroom boys tell the face in the front of things, here's what you're going to do. And if you don't do it, you're going to be out the door and under the bus the same as everybody else goes. So what happens? They have to put up a good show. I'll give you an example. I had some corruption go on inside the Federal Conservative Party, right? And it happens in every party. But to me, it was a simple fix. It was a couple of people doing stuff they weren't supposed to do. I reported it. Nothing got done. When Pierre Poilievre came in, I met with him in person. Small room, 9 people in it. And I told him, this needs to be resolved. And he didn't know about it. And he said, I'll deal with it. And I can tell you right now that the person who needed to be dealt with was a heavy backroom person. And that person hasn't been dealt with. So I can tell you that the system itself is corrupted to the point. I agree with Darren. I agree with you too, Graham. Is the reality of it is the current system in its current state cannot be fixed internally. And so what our job was down here was if we got enough independents in with their hands tied with the performance-based contract, they had to do what the people who voted them in wanted them to do. And when they tabled legislation, the other parties would have to support it. And they were going to, right off the bat, one of the things they wanted was effective recall, where only the people who voted could participate in a recall. You didn't have to have what happened in Gondek out there, you know, out in Calgary. They needed more people to get her kicked out than showed up to vote for her in the first place. Well, that just flat doesn't work. So we had a real good system and a bunch of things that we could have really made a change, and we really spooked the government, and that's why they broke their own legislation, went to an early and Doug Ford's doing the same thing up in Ontario right now because they want to run a bunch of independents up there too.
What about the Maritimes as like the 54th or 55th state? I mean, because Quebec, if it did happen, it wouldn't be, and I wouldn't want it to be all of Canada. I mean, I'd want Saskatchewan and Alberta to be their own state. Ontario, what's that?
And that would make sense. And same thing down here. You got to remember, guys, all of Atlantic Canada only has 6 million people in it.
Yeah.
You know, so We got Newfoundland, PEI, New Brunswick, and Nova Scotia, 6 million people. Well, what's that? Nothing. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't even compute.
But so you're not
the natural resources.
You're also you're also separated from Quebec quite a bit too, you know, but.
And they can have Quebec. I don't want Quebec.
No, that's what I mean. But do you think that the people would be ready for something like that? It doesn't sound like it. I mean, it sounds like the people haven't hit bottom yet, and they're still too brainwashed right now to even think about any, except for maybe like Alberta. It seems like everybody else is just going along with Team Canada right now.
Well, that's what Joseph Goebbels had perfected as the propaganda minister for Hitler. What he said is pick an enemy, name your enemy, then declare war on them, much like Trudeau and Carney have declared war on Trump, and then wrap that cause in the flag. And if you don't support it, you're a traitor to your own country. And that's been a proven technique for the last 100 years. Dictatorships have used it all around the world. Wrap your cause in a flag. And I'll give you an example. When we've got people at hockey games booing the national anthem, you're a brainwashed idiot. You're an embarrassment to Canada. Anybody participated in that? You need to go look at yourself in a mirror and realize you're fully brainwashed. And if you're a follower of mine on X, unfollow me. I don't want to have nothing to do with you. But what happens is those are the same people that are still driving around in a car wearing double masks by themselves with the windows rolled up, right? And still won't stand closer than following the arrows around at the mall. I mean, one day I almost stepped outside one of them little circles and killed a half a dozen people. Think how lucky I was. Right. So what happened, boys, that's why I wrote that book, because I was getting censored all, like they knocked me off X, and then everything I was posting on Facebook was being censored. And I said, well, you know, I worked on that book for 6 years, but I never really had a finish to it. But once we started that independent movement, I said, okay, so now I'm not just the average guy complaining. I can offer a solution. So in the last section of the book, everything that I lead up into there, and it's funny as hell, actually, because when I was younger, geez, I was a bootlegger before I was law enforcement. A bunch of things, but I was basically the guy you didn't want going out with your daughter. Just saying, right?
Yeah.
So I thought that would be a good way to name the book, The Redneck Conservative. But the reality, you guys, I can't in good conscience vote conservative. I can't vote for any party right now because I've been inside it, and the Conservative Party, although it reflects a bulk of what it should be to a conservative, they've gone so far to the left now that there's nobody left. Even Max is not, you know, he's the closest thing we have to real conservatives, but he doesn't have a hope in hell. Here's the issue is on a scale of 1 to 10, okay, Trudeau's like about a 0.5, right? Jagmeet's about a 0.3 in leadership. And then you got Max. Max is about a 3. And then you look at Pierre Poilievre, he's about a 5. And Carney, somewhere between, as far as leadership goes, he's only down around about a 2 or a 3. So what we have to vote for in this election is the best of the worst, right? Rather than the worst of the best. So we can pick from the best of the worst, but we're still not getting a leader. If you want to see leadership, all you got to do is just look south of the border and watch what happened in the last 4 weeks.
Yeah, this is what Darren and I have been talking about. There's no depth up here at all. I mean, but you kind of want the conservatives to at least win so that they can slow shit down a little bit.
Well,
you want them to win as big and as bad as possible so that at least they can slow shit down and stop the train a little bit. Because I don't think it's going to really fix anything long term.
I think what's going to end up happening, guys, is because of the floodgates have been opened. there's going to be enough people and enough things that Trump is going to continue leaking to the Canadian society that we're not going to be able to avoid the levels of corruption inside all levels of government.
Yeah. Yeah. Even like the global affairs stuff. I mean, that's out there now. Like, and the, this NGO web is being finally unraveled a little bit. And, you know, and whether that's like a controlled op for other, other agencies that need looking at in the States too, I'm open to that. But right now this is like more than we could have ever asked for, that, that they've gone in there and uncovered this whole thing that we've been talking about for years. And now people can go and send these lists around of all these, you know, foreign money laundering, slush funds that finally maybe people can wake up a little bit.
Which intelligence agency do you think is running that shit?
Down there right now, there's 13 to pick from, but I can't really tell you which one it is. I would say probably with their hooks in deepest are still the CIA.
How much do you think? Because, you know, I've been thinking lately about how much, you know, we've all been covering this forever about the CIA toppling, you know, dozens of regimes violently and peacefully and color revolutions all over the world. And, you know, we've just been hanging out like next door this whole time, assuming that our politics are completely clear and we don't have any CIA or Mockingbird up here. How big do you think the American intelligence agency influences our own politics? Because I got to say, when I'm even looking on the social media and see, I can't help but think, I'm like, you know, the WEF and China's in here too, but I was like, the CIA, there's no way they're not leaving this shit alone, man. They can't ignore it, you know? I mean, we all assume they are the Mexican drug cartels, don't we?
So here's the thing about the CIA, gentlemen. The CIA first came to Canada that I'm aware of under Pierre Trudeau. And they were they brought MK Ultra into Canada, the MK Ultra mind control stuff. Fifth Estate did a real interesting story on. If you don't know about MK Ultra, do a little bit of research. But the psychiatrist who headed up MK Ultra in Canada was a guy named Ewan Cameron. And Pierre, suspecting probably that Justin is not his actual son, maybe had, you know, more of the genetic material of Fidel Castro, he would actually go to military bases and bring young Justin and leave him alone with Ewan Cameron all day. And he did it multiple times. But Ewan Cameron is the guy who orchestrated all of the MK Ultra stuff that took place in Canada under the auspices of the CIA. The CIA have their hands in virtually everything. And then the other big agency that people forget is the United States State Department. And the United States State Department, their mission is to make sure people are in government that will do things that the United States government want done. So when Trudeau first ran for office, Obama brought his entire election team up, the people who orchestrated and helped Justin Trudeau get in that first election. And then most Canadians don't know, in the second election, in that snap election that he called during COVID, 205,000 mail-in ballots didn't get counted. 205,000. And that was enough to swing the election.
It's funny that doesn't get a lot of attention at all.
Well, that's probably the smartest thing they ever did. You got to remember that he takes a lot of direction from Gerald Butts. And Gerald Butts, prior to Mark Carney, probably Time Magazine or McLean's Magazine, probably a dozen years ago, named Gerald Butts as the most dangerous man in Canadian politics. And he's the disgrace of Cape Breton Island, because he's from down there too, down in Glace Bay. And so he was working for the time for the World Wildlife Federation. And I watched him on video three different times, said his only goal in life was to crush all carbon producing businesses in Canada. So when he first went to work for Justin Trudeau, he drew a salary of over $300,000 a year from the WWF, World Wildlife Fund, while he was still working for Justin Trudeau. And he was the guy who Trudeau went to university with, and they were real close buddies. Now, I don't know if they were as close a buddy as him and Seamus were, right? Just saying, right? And, but he's the guy who was the main puppet master for Justin Trudeau in his early years. And then he got taken over by the WEF.
What about McKinsey and all these consultants? Is that where Carney's been working through, or is that separate completely? Is Carney also sort of consulting since probably around 2020, I think, in an at least a somewhat of an official capacity? But there's also billions and billions. I mean, when we were looking into the consultants, we couldn't believe how much we were spending. Not only did they hired 100,000 people for the government and 33% increase since 2015, they've also spending billions on consultants. Like, You shouldn't be able to have it both ways.
Well, here's what happens. It's because everybody in the upper echelon, from director, supervisors, managers, and director and senior director level, they're all woke-tards. So there's nobody qualified to do the work. They have to go to these outside agencies. You can't even make this stuff up, guys. I was involved with some of this stuff. Right? I was inside government for 29 years. I mean, I saw some of the craziest stuff, and I wouldn't even go into any upper management because I wasn't the S-man. So, you know, I spent 29 years on ATVs and snowmobiles and boats and aircraft. And I had more fun than a man should be allowed to have. And then when I get out from there, I did a 3 seasons of a hunt fish TV show with my daughter called Best of Bull Run. It was the first show of its type actually in the world, father-daughter show. And then after that, Jim Shockey started
what
doing
was it called? Best of what?
Best of Bull Run. Anyway, we did 36 shows, and then I got a shoulder injury at work, and just before I retired, and I couldn't haul a bow anymore, and I couldn't shoot, and I was messed up for a while. But over the years, I worked myself back up into being able to do a lot of it. I'm kind of like Darren there. I'd rather be hunting and fishing than pretty near doing almost anything else, right? He's out in paradise out there, but I can make up for fishing giant bluefin tuna and stuff down here that you guys don't have. But you know, I'd love to go out and hunt elk, but so
yeah,
there's just, I don't know. I'm just lost for words sometimes.
Yeah. That's, that's the nature of the state right now in Canada. It seems like it doesn't seem survivable. I mean, it really doesn't seem, I don't see that there's enough will in the country to bother trying to save it at this point.
So I'll give you an example, guys, down in Nova Scotia. All the retired government employees, the provincial government employees, they haven't had a wage increase in 5 years. Meanwhile, minimum wage is going to go up 23% in the same time frame. And our premier is an accountant, and they make sure that the retirement fund is funded just under 100%. They keep it around 98.9, 99.3, 99.6% funded so they don't have to give raises to the seniors. Retired. If you're going to tell me that the accountant that we have, who was heavily involved in the Paradise Papers before he came up here, and I know his personal worth over $10 million, that I used to take the guy fishing, and I got hoodwinked by him. You know, I thought he was a good guy. He's basically a Manchurian candidate who was dumped in here to get something done. And Mark Carney's the exact same thing. So all the stuff I'm saying now, guys, I've been censored terribly, and that's why I wrote that book, because I knew if you have a copy of that book on hand in print, if they take me off of Amazon, and I know that they've done that to people, right, and they do any of that, you can just throw a copy of that to one of your buddies. And that book right there, although it's funny, that's number one in sports humor, but it was also number one in political ideologies and in sports biographies, is there's stuff in there that buries politicians. And, you know, I call a spade, and there's a lot of funny stuff. And don't get me wrong, guys, I was no angel. But, you know, that 2 years I spent in Thunder Bay, there's a whole book just in that. I'm sure they were glad to see me leave when I left university. But like I say, you know what? When we were doing the hunt fishing show, all my correspondents on the bottom said, it always said, fun is not overrated. So I don't care what I'm doing. If I can't find a way to have fun doing it, and to be honest with you, this big battle we're in here now, I look at this as the battle between good and evil, what we're dealing with. And so, you know, if I didn't have kids and grandkids and stuff here, my wife and I, we'd just pack up and we'd go down to the U.S. I'd be gone. There's lots of places to hunt and fish down there too, guys. But, you know, I grew up down in Cape Breton. It's the third most romantic island in the world. Place is beautiful. Not today. It's warm compared to you guys. It's only minus 10 or something down here, you know, balmy short weather for you boys out there. But it's, I still think it's kind of worth fighting for, but there's a lot of pros and a lot of cons. But the best thing Trump did was open everybody's eyes to the mess. But like I say, when you're starting to boo people at sports things, you're brain dead. There's something wrong with you.
You know what they might be underestimating? And that might be the reason that Carney's so blah. You know, Carney might be a lot less blah if it's 10 years ago, even, and I'm watching a lot more actual TV and things like that. Because the social media has kind of taken over the space, and what can, not social media, but let's say alternative media, because YouTube plays a pretty big role in that. You know, YouTube is now the number one video platform on the planet. It's blowing Netflix and everything else out of the water. People are just on YouTube all the time. And what Canada hasn't had until, it seems like since the trucker convoy, that, you know, in a lot of ways that was a turning point in Canadian history. We'll see where that turn led to in another couple decades, I guess. But there has been a real rise in alternative media on the Canadian side that did not exist in, like, you know, the best we had 5 years ago even was like Canada Land, which is like fucking liberal light. You know what I mean? Or there's just all this bullshit content that there was another one, Canada. You know, Canada Proud was just starting out. There's another one that escapes me that, but anyway, there's these few True North, is a little bit older, but there hasn't been, especially on the video side of things. I mean, the alternative media in Canada has been sort of fallen behind. Whereas this is, I feel like this has been the first year or two that it's really sort of stepped up. Those channels that, and it seemed like there was a lot of them that started up during that freedom movement. You know, the COVID got a lot of people going. And now as we head into this three, four, five years later, it's like those channels now have 150,000, 250. They went from getting almost no views on their videos to getting hundreds of thousands. I mean, that the interview with Sam Cooper had 150,000 views overnight.
Yeah.
I mean, that was unheard of 5 years ago in Canada. There was no fucking avenue for that to happen, because the people that were getting those audiences from the Canadians were in the States. And, you know, other than them touching on the Canadian thing from time to time, you weren't going to get a Sam Cooper on fucking Joe Rogan. He don't give it, you know, it's just not going to happen to, whereas now we've had these giant creators step up. And I mean, you know, you get a million plus people are going to end up watching this Sam Cooper interview on Northern Perspectives. And that's
easy.
I think that's over and above what any of the major networks are doing.
Well, and here's the other thing too. Sam's proved himself to be like highly, highly credible and probably one of the best investigative reporters in Canada for what he's doing. Plus, he's got
probably
that
the best right now, I'd say. That's my opinion. He's probably the best in Canada right now.
And it could very easily be. I just got a correspondence from him here today. I wanted to come down and do an investigation on Chinese interference in our election. He said, Pete, I'd like to, I just can't right now.
So, I'm trying to get on the show, but I think we're just a bit much for him.
Well, you know what, guys? I mean, here's the thing is, you know, and I've been on like a bunch of different shows on a bunch of different things. But when you take a look at, you know, you look at what Joe Rogan's doing and you look at what Tucker Carlson's doing. And on a bad day, you know, I'm looking at MSN. And I'm looking at CNN down there, like getting 99,000 views in prime time, and that's it. And so everybody's just getting wiped out. And the nice thing is that most people, you can still access them without having to get behind a paid firewall. And the guys I think are going to do the best will be the ones that split up their content, that give you enough free content that you'll still keep going. And if they bury it all behind a firewall, you're going to lose a lot of good people who can't cover, you know, can't do stuff. And I think the guys have come up with the best combination, because I tell you what, I watched some of the guys, because I went up to the truckers thing for the first 5 days. And I went up because I had a production company and I took some film gear, and I went up and I knew there was going to be false flag operations. And I went up, and it's the first time I think I ever did a Facebook live stream and stuff like that. And I said, well, you know, this is going to be the future, because everything that was on CBC and we were watching every day was 180 degree diametrically opposed to what I was seeing every day on the street. And because I was ex-law enforcement, I wore an old uniform jacket with the logos off it and my muskrat hat. So I could walk up to any of the cops and just carry on a conversation with them. They'd say, hey, where are you from? And I'd tell them. And every one of them to a man told me straight up that it was the most disciplined, well-behaved crowd in their entire work history. And their number one concern on the ground was false flag operations. Every one of them told me the exact same thing. I remember being there that first weekend and talking to two staff sergeants on the beat and say, guys, how many paddy wagons did you film over the weekend? He said, buddy, we never arrested a soul. I said, you're kidding. I said, how many people here? The press was saying there was around, I think, 5,000 to 7,000. They said, there's 35,000 people here. I said, how do you know? Because we said, we know how many square meters are on ground here. And when this place is packed, we know what the numbers are. He said, we've had between 30,000 and 35,000 people, and the press was saying 5,000 to 7,000. So right off the bat, I knew everything that the press was saying was an outright lie. And then because of my background in politics, I knew how they lie. And then my time inside government, we lied to the public every single day in my career, we lied to the public. Every day. Didn't matter what the issues were, big, small. If it made the government look bad, we lied to you about it. And mostly we didn't outright lie. We lied by omission. So we'd never tell you the whole story. We'd tell you the story that made the government look good, but we wouldn't tell you the story where you'd show up at a politician's doorstep with pitchforks and torches looking to tar and feather them. That happens every single day. And my dad's ex-military, right? Dad's gone now, but him and I used to argue out. He said, don't talk so goddamn foolish, man. They wouldn't lie about stuff like that. What would he say? They're not going to lie over that. And I said, Dad, I was there in uniform. I can tell you 100, this is what happened. Well, why are they saying that? Because he said, I don't know. They have an ulterior motive. They want to make the government look good. They're lying. And even till the day he died, he still had trouble believing that the government would look him in the eye and lie to him.
Yeah. To me, it's not so much about the TV losing the ratings, which they are. They've lost the mainstream, but it's enough. All they need is the headlines in these organizations and their own social media to create enough. Like, to me, what's happening is there's a headline generation, then the government reacts, and the government might even pay the organization to make the headline or to make the study that makes the headline. And it's just a circle jerk where the government can get to do whatever they want. They can clamp down, they do whatever. And even if people aren't watching the TV, it's just affecting all the social medias. It's affecting all the platforms enough where they've got the headline they need, and that's it. I mean, recently it was the 1% of drugs caught is only coming from Canada. And that was enough for my friends to say to me, oh, it's only 1%. I mean, it reached them instantly, and that was all.
How long do you think they'll be able to maintain that for? Because it seems like the alternative media's reaction to that was, because all I see everywhere on every fucking channel right now is fentanyl this, fentanyl that, fentanyl this.
It's crazy, boys.
That's why I wonder. I'm like, how much does the CIA have their tentacles?
We're in a bubble.
Fentanyl was a blocked word. Fentanyl was a blocked word on YouTube a month ago. If you used it, and now it's like all these other channels. So I just want to show quick for the thing that the evidence that I don't think we're in a bubble. I was just pulling these channels up. So here's the CTV News main channel. So if we look at their videos, I'm going to about a day old, videos a day old. The biggest one is the plane crash one here at 196,000 views. But take a look at all the other videos on their YouTube channel.
Oh, you're on YouTube? Yeah.
Yeah. So 8,000 views, 23,000, 2,400. These are down here, 55, 6.9K. And then if we just jump over to just Northern Perspectives just for a second, which is just one channel, and look at their stuff, that's, they only release a couple videos a day. Their video from an hour ago is at 18K. Yesterday, 133. 4 days ago, 166. It's just like, I think, I know what you mean, Graham, but I feel like it's just, it's kind of the same thing that the U.S. was late to keep up to. Yeah. Their social media game's not strong enough. And the other thing I think we're finding out is how much of it is fake.
Well, but you get
YouTube followers and the Twitter followers and all of it. Because it's like CBC has 3.9 million followers or whatever on Twitter. And then I look at a post and it's like, how do you only get 7 comments, man? I can get 7 comments.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
Well, you got to add the boomers watching TV still. I mean, that's just YouTube, right? There still is... 10 or 20% of Canadians are brainwashed by their TV. So you got to add that into the mix. So it's coming, I think, but it's still there. The brainwashing is still deep. Cause I hear from friends of mine in the, Vancouver and the coast, and they're just,
you're
like
a boomer almost.
They're just like, they're
well, I am a boomer, just eating up.
I can tell they're watching the headlines.
Yeah. So what happens, guys, is the best move that Gerald Butts ever convinced Trudeau to do was buy off the CBC. In his first election, he guaranteed them another $700 million if he got elected. And now they know that when Pierre Poilievre wins this next election, the news branch of the CBC is done. And when they can't put up a good case as to why they should have CBC News. Like the mountains of data that show how biased they are, it's just nauseating. I mean, it's way beyond just the level of straight up propaganda. I mean, it's just nonsensical, some of the stuff,
And especially, it's on the other, you see it in every like waiting room, and like it's in the elevator. Yeah. The elevators have CBC. Yeah.
So, you know, if you know anybody that's still listening to the CBC, this is an information war. Wars have casualties, right? And it's just, we've got family. They're casualties. I'm not saving them. You guys aren't saving some of your family. That, I mean, they're brainwashed to the point. You got to remember back in the 60s, it was a big deal. People would go down and rescue someone from a cult. And it took 30 days of intensive treatment to unbrainwash them. And so as soon as once you go and study all the key points of a PSYOP, this whole thing with Mark Carney is just a straight up, well-orchestrated PSYOP. They're ticking off every single box. Even when he was sitting there with the chorus thing, somebody Photoshopped, take some lines out of his face to make him look a little bit younger. Every single thing is carefully constructed, and the Liberal Party basically has unlimited funding. And now I was watching new stuff today that said the number one reason why the Liberals weren't going after the fentanyl crisis here in Canada is because some of the big drug pins were financing the Liberal Party. How many of those people do you think are compromised?
Yeah, it goes deep. Yeah. And the thing is, it's affecting our streets, the crime. I mean, it's just every metric of our society is on the downward slope right now, and people just don't get it. It's unbelievable.
You just have to assume it's all fake, and it's all been fake the whole time. I mean, you've been at this a lot longer than I have, so I'd be interested to hear your take on that, being a boomer, because, you know, I feel like I'm late to the party, but it doesn't matter where you go. And this is probably my main frustration with the COVID crowd, which I used to refer to all these influencers that have sort of woken up since COVID, or the Great Awakening, whatever the fuck it is. But it's just like, you know, they're just like stumbling into all this stuff that's ancient history if you've been paying attention for long enough. And they're kind of quick to jump on some stuff that maybe has already been worked out or debunked to a certain extent. But you know, it seems to me that at first it was like, fake news. Trump says fake news. Yeah. And then you start looking into it. It's like, holy shit, well, the news is kind of fake. And then into it a bit more, and then it's like, well, the news is pretty fake. And then after a while, you're like, whoa, it's all fucking fake. And I don't know about your the rest of your work, but we spend a lot of our time, you know, we've been to Egypt. We spend a lot of our time looking into the history side of things. And we're like, holy fuck, it's all fucking fake. You know, it's like,
100%
theories on what's going on and where we're, and it's like everywhere you look, it's full of holes, and you try and give them the benefit of the doubt that it's just the best they knew at the time, but then they seem to be using whatever means necessary to clamp it down at this point, to the point that, like, I don't even trust their timeline anymore. I don't think they went to the fucking moon. I don't trust their timeline of events. I don't think, you know, they know what the fuck they're talking about. And
so here's part of the problem, Darren, is that they without the internet, that could have gone on indefinitely, but you can't keep the truth bottled up long enough because there's too many people that ask questions. My mom was a real rebel. My dad was a military guy, and I spent my first 5 years in Germany playing in bombed out, bomb craters all around the PMQs in the town we were in. And mom and dad left a lasting impression on them because that was only 13 years after World War II when we were there. And some of the stuff that they saw over there, that stayed with them forever. They saw what socialism could do, how millions of people can be brainwashed to believe that, you know, they should be booing, for example, the national anthem of your best neighbor that's been protecting you for the last number of years to the south, right? Because still the CBC told them to.
Well, right? You're booing them. They're still protecting you actively.
Yeah, exactly. So what ended up happening is Mom used to read to me all the time, and by the time I was 6 years old, I'd read a set of encyclopedias from cover to cover. And after that, I questioned everything, because I'd sit in school and teachers would tell me stuff, and I'd go, well, that's bullshit. I was only like 8 years old going, well, that's a lie. I just read that in an encyclopedia. So I started to question, man, I was like a hockey stick man in the spokes of a bicycle. I drove them crazy. Like, they would call my parents and say, look, this son of yours is like, I guarantee you, if they'd have had Ritalin, they'd have had me like, holding me down, jabbing it into me to shut me up. But then when I got involved in natural resources, and, you know, if you have a family and kids and stuff, you spend a lot of your time, and you'll find that most of your friends that are brainwashed are spending most of their time working, and they don't really have time to do the research that we're doing. And so you have to kind of pick and choose and try to get the right information to them. And that's why even on, you know, people's attention spans are pretty short. If you're trying to get a message out through to them, you don't get a message across them in less than 60 seconds on some issues, they're gone.
Well, not only that, they're oblivious. They just don't, you know, most people, they like, I've got buddies like my, you know, Miles, you know, I don't know if you listen to Plus or not, but you know, he's like my best buddy, but it's like, you know, I can, he'll listen to all my shit, but he's like, yeah, man, I don't give a fuck. You know, I believe you. I believe you, but I just, you know,
roll me up another doobie.
Yeah, or just like, you know, I got work, I got the wife, I got the dogs, I just, you know, whatever, you know, they just, and I think that that's a giant swath of the thing. Actually, they kind of get it, but they're just, you know,
So do you guys know who Yuri Bezmenov is? Yuri Bezmenov was the guy who did that interview with, I think it's J. Edward Griffin, the guy who wrote The Creature from Jekyll Island. And he had said that there was a number of steps to demoralizing a society. And it was all laid out. You can go back and find that. Everybody should go and find that interview on YouTube and watch it. And it lays out every step of it. And one of them is demoralization. And demoralization is when people start to think there's nothing I can do anymore. I mean, why would I bother? It's like in Nova Scotia. That's why we had a 46% voter turnout, because people throw their hands in the air and they say, well, they're all going to do no matter what, they're going to do what they want to do. And so, right, the fact of the matter is I can't give up. I only got another, I'm 60, almost 67, and I only got about another 40, 50 years left in me to fight this thing, right?
There you go.
So I'm trying to get stuff done, man. But the fact is no matter what, is I do interviews at any place I can because of this, you're still getting censored in Canada. And about 3 weeks ago, Trump gave one of the best political speeches in history. It was only about 6 minutes long, and he declared war on the censorship industrial complex. And what people don't understand, here in Canada, he's trying to save us from the censorship industrial complex that's to his northern border, because he's declaring that on everybody. And that's why J.D. Vance went after them over in Europe the other day. You know, you got grown pussified men over there, like, crying because the evil man said bad words that hurt me.
Well, I mean, it can't even be that. Do they really think he's evil, or are they just worried about their own paradigm as being shattered? Like this, like, infrastructure that they've been trying to build on misinformation and censorship and climate change is falling apart. I mean, I almost feel like it's a more selfish reason, not a fear. It's like, oh, all we've worked for is falling apart. I, you know, could it be that? It doesn't even seem like fear.
Well, look what happened to DEI in the U.S. and look what happened to sexualization of kids in our school. I'll give you an example. One of the reasons why the Liberal Party crashed so bad, because they were importing people from the Middle East, and they were creating permanent voter blocks in swing ridings. Because I was inside politics. Why are they bringing people in? Why are they doing it right now, putting 2,000 people into small communities? Oh, what they're doing is strategically
communities. Wow.
They're strategically overloading voter blocks. And if it's a swing riding, they'll try to overload them right now so that they will always feel indebted to vote for the Liberal Party. And it's very strategic, and it's not stupid at all. But here's what happens. They underestimated the Islamic doctrine that will not put up with the sexualization of kids in school. And the plan was working perfectly, and they were on potentially online to win this next election. And then last year we had a million person march about, you know, teaching 5-year-olds about how to have sex with carrots, right? And so what ended up happening, and, right, you know, the word is out on the street, I can neither confirm nor deny the sexuality of a prime minister, but the reality of it is he was supporting a lot of things that most people don't believe in. And nobody wanted to come out and say it because nobody wanted to be ostracized in the public. But I'm telling you, you need to leave the kids alone. So the whole entire Islamic community turned on the Liberal Party. And that's why, since that happened, the heavy thrust has been importing people from India.
Pretty ironic.
If you want to know why it shifted, that's why it shifted, because they lost the support of the Islamic community. And even if Trudeau's gay, he can't come out of the closet, because as soon as he does, the imams can't go into their mosques and say vote for an openly gay politician. So if anybody's ever wondered why a politician doesn't come out of the closet and you rely on the Islamic vote, that's why you can't do it.
It's pretty ironic that they're against the child sexualization when they're guys.
Well, yeah, because they got bocce boys and they got a whole bunch of things over there, right? And if you don't know what a bocce boy is, go look that up.
Well, yeah, not only that, like Muhammad, you know, banged his wife when she was 9.
Well, you know, I mean, you got to cut him some slack. She was 6 when he married her, but they didn't consummate it till she was at least 9.
Waited long enough. Yeah, he waited long enough.
Yeah, come on now. Just saying. So here's what happens, guys. You import the third world, you become the third world. Look what's happening in Toronto and Montreal. That's insane. I mean,
yeah,
you can't justify that.
No, that was a real bad idea. I don't know. It seems like it was by design to just, I mean, it's ironic.
100% was by design.
Colonization 2.0 is Indians. I don't know if that was somebody's like idea of a joke or what, but
well,
Indians should be especially riled up. I'm an Indian. I'm like fuck, you're going to bring in 5 million of these fucks. You still owe me money.
It's like, well, here's the thing is, guys, right? Like, I got to pay all my taxes. I got to pay everything. I'm here in Nova Scotia right now, and I'm looking at our economy down here. You know that we got the heaviest tax burden of anybody in Canada here in Nova Scotia?
I got to pay all my taxes insane. And pay for your health care.
Yeah, and high test now is $1.75 a liter, right? Yeah, and then those idiots in Ottawa, they're going to crank our carbon tax up again here on April Fool's Day. And people are worried about a tariff. Quebec right now is charging like almost 300% tariffs on dairy and poultry and eggs, stuff like that. Nobody's talking about that. They've been doing it for years. And meanwhile, you guys send them $12 billion a year. And or, you know, Alberta sending them $12 billion a year, and they won't let you run Energy East out here to the East Coast.
Well, and they're dumping milk too. They're dumping like the gallons of the dumping horse, is unbelievable how much they're wasting. I mean,
it's crazy. It's just,
none of it makes sense on any level. Like
it's all about, even when you guys say down east, guys, we're not down east. We're Atlantic. Down east, what you guys call down east are the fools living in Ontario and Quebec, right? We kind of separate ourselves a little out here, but. In a lot of cases, though, we're not much better. I can tell you, I've never voted Liberal, and I don't think they'll get a seat here in Maritime Canada in the next election. But I'm surprised. I'm watching on social media how many people, and what they're trying to capitalize on. Who would you rather have dealing with Donald Trump, Pierre Poilievre or Mark Carney? Well, if you research Mark Carney, he's the last person that you want to have touching anything in your life. And I still, like today, I see that the Conservatives just come out with a new logo, and it's going to be, and it's great, actually. It's 5 words on Mark Carney. It says, if I win, you lose. If I win, Canada loses. Brilliant.
I'm glad I got a bit of time before. I'm about, like, 8 years away from deciding where I'm going to settle down and retire. So it gives me a bit of time, at least 7 years, maybe 6. Before I move away from Alberta. Anyway, if I move away from Alberta, I mean, right now I'm kind of happy to be in Alberta. We've got one of the best demographics in the Western world. We've got sitting on a bunch of oil. But it kind of, like I said, we're held hostage by the East, so it sort of depends what happens out there. I still worry that Alberta, that down south, could go off the rails a little bit, so I got a little bit of time to keep an eye on that. But my thought is that, you know, I might, because I'm an Indian, so we can just go. Me and my wife can just go to the States, and I'm a permanent resident, so we could just start working and set up shop, and then I could get my kids down there.
Could you get me down there too then? I mean, is that
you got all that good hunting out in Alberta, buddy.
Well, Montana's not much worse. I mean, well, Montana and Alberta, Montana's arguably just a little bit better because you can also hunt mountain goats and turkeys.
Well, then Montana it is. See,
Montana is pretty good. Yeah, well, right now I share my kids with my ex-wife, so there's some custody stuff, so that I got to deal with that for another 6 years. And like I say, I'm the States could still go off the rails, so I'd like to see what happens there in a little while, but it's an option. And the reason I bring that up is because I'm starting to think, and you know, when I really started thinking this was when I watched J.D. Vance's speech in Europe, because I watched it. I didn't watch it live, but I watched it fairly quickly after. And the thought I got is like, he's kind of talking to these guys, but he's talking to the European people same time. And I got the takeaway to the European people, to me at least, was not that, you know, Europe can be saved. It was almost that Europe is fucking lost. And I've been saying this sort of thing for a little while here, that it seems to me that setting the stage, because I think this growth stage of America, he keeps talking about America growing. I mean, 51st state for Alberta sounds great. I think it's going to happen in the next little while. I doubt it. The next couple decades, I doubt it. Independence for Alberta, I doubt it. Is Trump going to get Greenland? I think he will. I think he'll probably end up getting Greenland, and he'll end up getting to put bases up in our Arctic. And he'll get the Panama Canal back. But he keeps talking about growth and this expansionism. What if the expansion, and at the same time, we're shutting down this border. So we're not going to let any more, you know, Mexicans or Chinese or illegals or whatever coming in through the southern border. At least that's supposedly the plan. But, we're still... America still needs some immigrants. It still needs, you know, it's not quite having enough kids yet. It's close, but it, you know, ideally it still needs some people, you know. And I bring this back to the No Agenda show and Adam Curry, and he's always talking about this New York banker, and it's been good on for years. We're saying that America needs to get to like 500 million, 450, 500 million, and then it's good. And then it's like, that's how it wins this global race for dominance. And I'm starting to think, you know, what if the expansion isn't necessarily geographical? What if it's like a huddled masses 2.0, where it's like, you know what, if you're a fucking white dude with some expertise in Europe and you're fucking sick of it, fucking here's the website, sign up, we're fast tracking you, we need this many people to come from here. Because, I mean, that's the thing in Canada is like the buzz going around right now. And this is where I say, you know, how much of this has to do with intelligence agencies and stuff like that is something like 43% of young Canadians, like under 25 right now, if given citizenship, would move to the U.S. if they could change their assets over dollar for dollar. I mean,
why wouldn't they?
What's that fucking number in Europe or in England? Like England's right now got the fastest... The second only to China number of millionaires exiting a year.
It's like 10,000 left last year.
Yeah, they got 10,000 a year to China's 30,000 a year, but China's got 30 times the population. So they're by per capita the fastest in the world, and it's not even close. And this is where the millionaires are already doing. You know, if you looked at where they're going, they're overwhelmingly. I mean, a lot of them going to Dubai, but I think probably lots of them going to the States. Because they see that as this last sort of thing. So how much of that spreads out if it's like, hey, man, come on over. We need fucking people. We're sick of them being fucking immigrants. We want European stock like we were built on. You know, Canadian boy, yeah. Fucking come on down. What the fuck does that look like to the entire economy of the world? To like, you know, Graham, what do you do if you're just offered citizenship?
Well, I'd probably go. I mean, that's the main block for me. I mean, somebody...
And I think the younger you get, higher that number goes. And I think
if like,
you
have the fuck, kids, dude, that just number move. Yeah. And I can't, I mean? Like, well, I can't just move. I mean, you know, it'd be nice to. I mean, I was the coldest spot in the world today, actually, here. I don't know, minus 38 or minus 40, but apparently the headline was the coldest spot in the world. I mean, what the fuck? Why are we living in this climate? It's crazy.
That's what my wife said to me today, man. You know, I'm doing FaceTiming with friends down in Florida going, Pete, you're out of your mind, man. Sell your house. Yeah. I mean, the market's fantastic down here right now for what I have, but I got grandkids and I got kids and stuff here, right?
So is that the precursor to the brain drain hitting the like, because the brain drain's always been a third world. I mean, Canada's suffering from it. UK's suffering from it. But it's you know.
Well, here's the big thing right now.
It's a third world thing where we take the smartest people from the third world and say, get the fuck over here. We need the smart people. But it seems like that's coming home now where it's like Canadians and Europeans, if given the opportunity, just would like to get the fuck out of here as quickly as possible.
Well, so what we're looking at is we don't have the solution that was just offered to the U.S. I guarantee if Donald Trump came in here tomorrow, 30 days from now, that would turn around and people would say, no, man, you know what? We're going to make a go of this place because I still love the country. I love the country and the space and the rest of it, right? But there's still a shit ton of space down in the U.S. too. But the reality of it is our buying power up in here in Canada has virtually been cut in half, literally in half in the last 10 years. Like literally in half.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And so, and there's no solution to that problem, right? Because under the current government, even with Pierre coming in, they aren't going to open the dam. They're not going to, this is not going to be, you know, what's happening down in the U.S. That's not going to be happening here. So what happens is people have to make decisions and stuff. And my wife and I say it'd be nice to have a place here and a place down south.
Yeah.
Right. It's just economically. And the biggest thing is grandkids and stuff like that. Yeah. And I don't mind staying around because I come from 2000 years of Celtic warriors and I kind of enjoy the struggle and the fight to tell you the truth.
I would too if I felt like it was going to be a fight, but I just feel like it's going to be a slow breakdown of everything. That if it was just me, sure, but I got, you know, kids I'm raising, and if I have the opportunity, if, you know, it's almost like if you picture yourself being in one of the Eastern Bloc countries in like 1944, you know, but you have the internet or you have the history to say, holy shit, man, there's some people saying that they're going to basically put an iron curtain all the way down this, and we're going to be stuck over here. And it looks like that side's leaning towards being better.
We're out of here.
Gone. I mean, that's, you know, there's a certain aspect where, strangely enough, and I call myself a conspiracy theorist, but with three little girls, I'm just like, you know, I'm not that little anymore, but I'm just like, at what point do I just need to get them the fuck out of here for their own good? Right now, it's sort of when they're 20, it's like, hey, man, we got the money and the freedom. Let's get the fuck out of here. And is that what they want? But at what point is it sort of your moral duty to try and do that as opposed to just stay on the sinking ship? Because I can't just send them down there.
Well, true enough. So, and that's the problem that I'm confronted with too, right?
Because it's almost like not giving up, but we have to retreat almost. It's like, okay, well, you know, we've lost this fucking trench. We need to go back to the other trench because this ground is fucking lost.
So here's what I can say, guys. If the Liberals win again in this election, the country's screwed. We'll never recover from four more years of a Liberal government. It's not going to happen. If a Liberal government gets in, you'll see Trump take over Canada. He will not allow this mess to continue for another 4 years. I think what he's trying to do is try to wake up enough Canadian people to try to at least snap enough common sense in them, hoping that he may be able to do some bargaining and, you know, make a deal. If you haven't studied the Sun Tzu and you haven't read, you know, if you haven't read The Art of War and you haven't read The Art of the Deal, you don't understand Donald Trump. It's that simple. And I'm on the Sun Tzu now for about the fourth time rereading it. And I've read The Art of the Deal twice so I can understand the man. And I got people that are going, you know, they're running around with their hair on fire talking about Trump. And I'm going, well, go read his book, man.
I know, but
he's predictable.
And plus, we understand where he's coming from. I mean, because we should have been doing that too, right? We should have been making our country prosperous. Yeah. We had the ability. So is there anything in your book that you want to mention before we kind of wrap it up here? Or
well,
I want to make sure you get enough time to...
Well, here's the thing about the whole book, guys. It said that the book is The Redneck Conservative, How Conservatives Are Made. But ultimately, the book travels through my entire life story, what I've done, all the things that I've dealt with that actually gave me that conservative mindset. But all through the book, and like I say, the book's as funny as hell. I tell some stuff in there that I had to wait till some people were dead, right, to write this thing. And so I'm not kidding. And what it does, though, is it lays out, here's what's happening. It's the kind of book that when you read it, if you're a liberal, I recommend that you read it in a boat in the winter, right? Or at least when it's cold, because if you read that thing on dry land near the forest, when your head explodes, you'll have a forest fire and we got no one trained enough to put the fires out, right? So be careful with that book when you go to read it, if you're a liberal, because it will make your head explode. But I've got all kinds of data in there that people can refer to, and it's a real good lesson, and it's a book that you can give to a person that's starting to ask questions. And by the time there's enough information, there's enough rabbit holes in that book to send you down for the next 10 years. But I base everything on real life stories, and I'm just a good old boy from down in Cape Breton, man. I'm not, you know, I'm not Ernest Hemingway. I'm not an accomplished writer. I'm just a guy who had a story to tell, and I don't pull any punches, and it's 100% politically incorrect. I think I have one thing in there that says I make my coffee with liberal tears in the morning, and if you're upset by anything I say in this book, you can have yourself a big old heaping cup of shut the F up, and we'll say it on your show, right? And realize your parents raised a pussy.
Well, that's something we didn't even – we talked about the political problems facing Canada. And I mean, maybe we can sort of finish up with this, but I talked about those Europeans and Canada and Canadians maybe getting offered this U.S. citizenship type thing, because the other problem we didn't touch on here is the competency crisis. That is
ripping. That's that DEI crisis. We did.
It's a lot of it's DEI. I definitely would blame a lot of it on DEI, but there is just like, You know, even the non-DEI hires I have are fucking borderline useless compared to where we were when we were coming in, who would have probably been considered borderline useless when, if you know, to the people your age when we were coming in, being like, fucking Jesus Christ, man. And now
when I grew up, you were allowed to call people that, though, Darren. I mean, if you know, now when I grew up, we called people like that, you know, back then you were allowed to call them retarded.
Is that right? The trade-off for not yelling at each other at work?
Because here's one other little thing, guys. I'll throw this in. You know why Canadians don't fight back? Because in the mid-80s, everybody that went to school from the mid-80s on, you got punished for fighting back. And for generations, we taught kids in all levels of school that if you fight back, you're going to be punished as much as the person who caused the problems. And subconsciously, we have generations of Canadians now who were taught, do not fight back because the price you pay is not worth it.
Yeah.
And that started in the mid 80s. Because I went back one day and talked to a psychologist and she said, this is where it started. So if you want to know why people don't fight back, you read my book in there, you'll learn how to fight back. And you can find that on Amazon and it's available in audio and ebook. And if you got a friend that you need to wake up, you know, I mean, you might lose him as a friend afterwards, but I guess maybe if you lose him because he read that book, he wasn't your friend anyway. but at least you'll know where you stand with him. I can tell you that, guys. Anyways, look, I really appreciate the invite. I liked it was a real pleasure. And here's the thing, guys. There's more guys like you all around the country than we realize.
Yeah, I hope so.
Where can people, did you give us, what's your website? Do you have Twitter? What's your social media?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. My handle's there on the bottom. I'm at Peter R. McIsaac.
You better spell that. McIsaac is M-A-C-I-S-A-A-C.
Yeah, a lot of people don't get that spelled right. But in the book is The Redneck Conservative, and it's if you put it on Amazon. The only thing I'd ask, too, is when you read it, I didn't realize how important it was. Like I say, I'm not an author to get reviews. And if you really like it, give me a good review. And if you don't like it, don't give me a review at all. Don't want to hear from you.
Nice.
Okay. That's been great. If you find yourself out west, give me a call. Shoot me an X message or whatever, and maybe we'll go shoot an elk or something.
I would love to. I'll do the call. And you know what? If you want to go for an elk, let's film it and turn it into a good YouTube episode. I can do that.
Yeah.
By the way, too, guys, I'm invited out to something in BC there. I think they're trying to set it up on April the 8th. And it's some kind of a freedom thing. I'm not sure what the details are in it, but it's one of, you know, we get invited in to talk. And they want to know what we're up to with independent Nova Scotia. So I'll drop you guys a line. When whatever comes out of that judicial review, I'll drop you guys a line and I'll keep you up to date.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Sounds good. Other than that, guys, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
See
ya. Thanks, Peter. Have a good night. Yep.
You got it, guys.
And that was a chat with Peter McIsaac, Redneck Conservative. What'd you think?
My second cousin. I think it
really is.
Hey, well, dude, I mean, my grandma's got like so many brothers and sisters from the same place, McIsaac's. I mean, big families. You never know.
Interesting. Crazy.
We're like, you know, related a few generations back.
There you have it. Well, big thanks to Peter for coming on the show. Big thanks to you guys for being our Plus supporters. We couldn't do without you. We wouldn't do without you. Ian says we should run for office. That's not gonna. I'm more apt to run for the fucking hills at this point.
Yeah.
Big thanks to Peter for coming on the show. Check out grandamerica.ca for other podcasts. Almost 700 episodes over there. David Icke, you got this crowd to like that one. And contact at thecabin.com for the trips. Adultbrain.ca for audiobooks and publishing your book if you want. Also print and ebooks. GrandAmericaCBD.com for the CBDs and such and tinctures and gummies. And GrandAmerica.ca/rooms for the medicinals. Other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next week.
Who's going to kill this sacred cow? You were never political anyhow. Since when did you start trusting in the government? Since when was it okay to ridicule and shame your neighbor? Your opinions have become as fickle as artificial flavors. What matters most to you? What the TV host told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north? Oh, true. Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never religious anyhow. Since when did you kiss the ring on the hand of the Pope? Since when do we need pharmaceuticals to cope? Your soul has become, ever-loving soul has become, as brittle as communion wafers. What matters most to you? What the Holy Ghost told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. Bureaucrats think I'm non-essential anyhow. Since when has our culture become so lowbrow? It's all touchscreens, and nobody has any know-how. Your idea of fun, your idea of fun, is taking 1,001 photos of your duck face. Matters most to you what the celebrities post told you was cool, or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your 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 sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your sacred cow.